Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Keizo Seki, the chef owner of the Michelin-starred sushi restaurants Sushizo in LA, New York, and Bangkok. Keizo moved from Tokyo to LA in 1991 and has observed the progression of sushi culture in the US for the last 26 years. So today we'll talk about his philosophy of sushi making, his thoughts on American sushi culture, what the essence of great sushi is, and much, much more. But quickly before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website as well as on iTunes and Stitcher's podcasts. So please go to iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe to Japan Eats. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. And you can email us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org. And now let's start our conversation with Keizo Seki. Hello, Keizo. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Akiko-san.
Welcome. So, first of all, where did you grow up and what did you eat when you grew up?
I was born and raised in Osaka, Japan. It's the middle of Japan.
Mm-hmm. And Osaka is famous for kudaori, eat until your job.
So. Yes, I love to eat okonomiyaki, takoyaki. It's a soul food in the Japanese. Yeah, right. Every single home has a takoyaki plate in for living in Osaka.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, I grew up in Tokyo, so I didn't know that culture. Right. Yeah, actually, a lot of people say, what's next after ramen? People say okonomiyaki or takoyaki, so we'll see. Why did you decide to become a sushi chef?
I so much love to eat sushi. I was wondering when I was poor, how can I eat every day sushi? So I was wondering, and then I chose to become sushi chef. So we supposed to eat, taste before we serve to the royalty customer. Mm. That's the reason to I started.
Okay, hopefully you eat less than the customers.
Yeah.
Right. When you grew up in Osaka, it's a different kind of like press sushi, and right. And I think we're going to talk about the nigiri a little bit later. But when you grew up, you had a nigiri sushi or press sushi?
Press sushi. It's a home. Sometimes we talk out. My family take out for me. Then I ate, but. I was interested in more like a Edomaya style, which is eat by counter from chef.
Mm.
That's more like a stylish and the lively. That's what I like it about
right.
it.
It's almost like a theater kind
yes,
of.
Yes, yes, right. yes. This is like a stage.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you train yourself to become a chef?
I came to the Tokyo when I was 19 years old. And then I tried to run at the sushi restaurant as a chef. So at the time was not popular, like a culinary school or something.
Mm.
So I just ran at the restaurant. like a stubborn oyaji-san under there. I just walking for it.
Right.
And so I started running.
But did you know someone in Tokyo to work and train yourself?
Yeah, I have a friend. And then, yeah, that's I was working one of a restaurant he recommended.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it still there now?
Not anymore.
Okay. Yeah. I was curious. I'm going to go.
It's in Nakameguro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Okay. So how long did you train?
About nearly 10 years, 9 years.
People say to become a sushi chef, you need like 5 years before you touch fish. I have to keep cooking rice and clean.
Yes.
Is that what it is?
So 10 years is still baby for the sushi chef in an old-fashioned way. Because we start like a dishwash few years and then start washing the rice and then cooking the rice for a few years. And then it takes about 5 years until you get using a knife.
Wow. So like in the movie Jiro, Dream of Sushi. But did your master teach you actually? We have to really support and learn.
In an old-fashioned way, they don't teach me nothing. Because I can ask them to question. And then also you watch and then learn. You try yourself. You think yourself. That's only one way to learn.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. But if you have that question,
I can ask a question, of course. Yeah.
And actually tell you, he told you.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's watching and doing the big difference. When I watch it, they do it so smoothly. So it looks like easy. But I try it, it's not that easy. Don't take so long time to get the. Master degree.
So it's not an exaggeration that we have to keep watching just by making rice, washing dishes, and then you really learn.
Yes.
Okay. And so in 1991, you moved to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So why did you decide to move to L.A.?
I think that time, cheapest ticket from Japan.
Okay. But you didn't consider a move to New York or other places?
One friend working at the L.A. the sushi bar. But I never seen him in L.A. Because he left L.A. so quickly. But he told me that here is like sushi boom. And then lots of open sushi place has a long line. So he told me, you better take a look.
Wow. Well, what was the Japanese cultural stage? You know, now everybody knows sushi and ramen and everything, but when you moved there, it was just the beginning of sushi boom?
I don't know deeply, but there's a several time sushi boom, which is people who came to from Japan. To the L.A., they create like a California roll or spicy tuna roll.
Right.
That's, I think, first boom. And then my boom, I think this is the second boom.
Okay. So people had a familiarity with sushi rolls. And then next, the real traditional sushi.
Yes.
Wow. So when you got there, are there many traditional sushi shops already?
At the time? At the time, no. I never seen that because... So last 5 to 10 years, we becoming getting a good fish. Before that, like 20 years ago, that's a terrible frozen sushi, frozen fish, lots of them.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I was so culture shock compared with Japan.
So what changed in terms of distribution?
Yeah, but the technique of transportation from Japan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, the major source of fish was still from Japan.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
because I think I had a couple times discussion about how distribution of sushi from that moment fish was caught to your kitchen. Yeah, the American and Japanese way to transport fish is very different.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we're using like, I would say 60-70% of fish from Japan. But all over the world, like... Of course, here the East Coast has a incredible good fish, especially winter time. So also we use daily basis to the ship to the LA.
Okay,
we're using that. Also, locally, in LA, like Siochen. That's the most famous sweet, creamy Siochen there.
Right.
Also, we have some fish from South Africa, even Australia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So, so do you think in terms of shipment throughout this country, is it better in terms of fish transportation?
Yeah, getting better, better every day. I think I felt it a good condition.
Really?
Fish from Japan.
Okay. Yeah. But, you know, like Boston fish or something like that. Do you think you can just get in good quality?
Yeah,
in
Boston
one?
Fish is most famous is the tuna. This is a really good condition.
Right.
Yeah.
But then it's transported from Boston to, for instance, L.A., like without any problems?
LA. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of them.
Like by FedEx or like probably.
Yeah, something like this.
So overall, it's you can really rely on the system of fish distribution now.
Yes, we are really appreciative of working over there.
Right. So probably because sushi is becoming more popular and supply became popular.
Yes. So chef also try to do more cross traditional way or their own way to become more scale, to better service, better fish.
Okay, right. Okay, and when you arrived in LA, did you have any connections?
Connection? I didn't have connection. I just play around, and then, not the connection much.
So it's just that, here I am, but I don't know anybody. So you have to do something, everything from the scratch.
Yeah, I started looking for that job at the time. Yeah, the newspaper.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then started working for?
Started working for somebody else, somebody restaurant.
Sushi restaurant.
Sushi restaurant, yes.
Okay, so that was the place where people served sushi bowls?
Yes, yes. It's kind of family style, restaurant.
Okay. And so what kind of customers came that time?
At the time, it was mostly like a family customer.
Okay, right. And so you trained there. sorry. Well, what kind of a... What's the name of the restaurant, by the way?
It's called Hidezushi.
Hidezushi.
It's on a hotel in West Los Angeles.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. And so you trained there, and eventually you opened a Sushizo in West Los Angeles.
Yes.
So in the same area?
Similar, like 10 minutes.
Okay.
5-10 minutes.
So it was in 2006, right? So it was a long time to open your own, but it's amazing.
Yes, thank you.
So what kind of sushi restaurant did you want to create?
Create? I mean, I just try to survive myself. And then when I was around Tokyo, a little bit like a traditional Edomai style, my oyaji-san try to pursue the good fish and then create like a soul of the sushi. So I want to do that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and probably you are one of the very first people who served traditional edamame.
No, not really. We have a lot of legend in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
And I learn from them too. Yeah, I see the lots of sushi place. I ate them before I opened.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, between 2019 and 2006, there's a lot happened in LA. Right.
Yes.
Okay. And so you only served, and now still to omakase at your restaurant.
Yes.
So, which is a multi-course menu selected by the chef.
Mm-hmm.
So why only omakase and no a la carte menu?
Yeah, when I was started, I wasn't sure. So I just made the spicy tuna roll and salmon skin roll. I did a little while. But also since we offer the omakase, many people have omakase too. So I just became the omakase only restaurant.
But isn't it easy, you know, that omakase takes time and you have to plan the courses every day?
Yes.
And versus a la carte, you can just stop in and then order.
Yeah.
And you have more customers.
But since space is tiny and then walk is a small number, so we couldn't pass it both of way because, omakase customer who trusts me is the most important customer from me.
Right.
So I just try to concentrate.
Mm. So that's the concept of omakase, the trust between
yes,
customers.
And then more omakase mainly is more good for me. Mm. I just train more, concentrate, and then train myself to be more upper level, looking for the better from yesterday.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, today is more better thing to serve.
Right.
I try to effort for that.
As a chef, probably omakase is almost like writing, I don't know, the scenario or book or something, because it's a sequential courses.
Nice to have a story. Because the reason to serve this fish in this point, or the most importantly, we call it Itaikan, is about a unique... united, like a harmony between the shari and the fish.
Okay, so itta means unified.
Yeah,
and
unified.
Kan means
feeling. Yes, like a harmony.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay, and the by the way, omakase means leave it to you. So that's the real trust.
Yes, real trust. Simply trust me.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay, and there's a nuance is similar to tasting menu, but tasting menu sounds like this is the best out of this this chef. But omakase is like really like whatever happens, I'm responsible to because I left it to you.
Yes, so like restaurant side thinking or customer side thinking.
So you
can see from same vision. From a customer,
right?
Then what should I be? How can I make them more happier or satisfy more?
But does it take a long time to cultivate that kind of customer base?
Yes, I learn from customer a lot. Yeah.
Okay, so gradually they started to.
Yes. So every day still learning from customer.
Great. Okay. And you call your sushi style Zo style, not Edomae. So what do you mean by that?
Basically, style is the same, similar, but Edomae means supposed to be used in, in front of Tokyo Bay. You can see ocean from Edo Castle. That's why they start calling Edomae. And then a lot of people using a Japan fish or something.
Right.
But we try to get the fish even where they're from. Doesn't matter where they're from.
Okay.
But it depends on the season and then depends on the way to transportation. Fish condition is different. And this even start season, end of season, and a few months period, different condition, where they get from.
Right.
To. So always those style is, since we opened here in the United States, we try to get the American people who live here, most importantly, target my customer. And then I was thinking of how can I make them more happier.
Right. So that sounds like it includes reading the palate of your customers of that location and best fish out of that location.
Yes.
And the condition of the day and everything. You have to be a comprehensive package of edomae. I mean, I think the edomae, essence of edomae still is, but the Zo style is more global.
Yeah. Basically, never compromise myself.
Right.
And then just face to customer straight, and then be confident, and then think about what can I do to make this customer happier. That's basically thinking. This is the Zo style.
Right. So that's the omotenashi.
The omotenashi, yes. Yes.
Right. Okay. Great. Let's take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk about how Keizo makes his sushi so special. So please stay with us.
Z Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Keizo Seki, the chef owner of the Michelin-starred sushi restaurants, Sushizo in LA, New York, and in Bangkok. So, on your website, you say the balance between the neta, the seafood, and the shari, sushi rice, is the most important aspect of sushi. So, what do you mean by that?
Just like sushi is the simplest food. Just rice and fish togetherness. And then that simple is best. There's a small, tiny piece inside, everything in there. So one of my expression to the customer, but also same time, all the people working very hard as a team in the background, also more like a fisherman or a supplier. Lots of people to effort in the one piece. So we are thinking about how can I express about the thing. So we need to customer, let them say to the wow experience. That's what we are looking for.
Okay. So sounds like the balance. I mean, earlier, before the break, you said itaikan, right? So it's a kind of a unified mode.
Yes.
And then
yes.
in your mind, customer's expectation, today's fish, everything's unified. And
yes.
then sushi and the fish as well, right? Okay, so itaikan, that's the word. So how do you cook your rice to differentiate yourself from other sushi chefs?
Yes, rice is, I think, most important thing about sushi. A lot of people, of course, fish is fine. That's basically. But rice is different, and rice is most important thing. I would say 70 to 80% of the taste of sushi, it depends on the rice. So like a firmness, and then flavor of vinegar or other ingredient, that's decide how good this sushi is.
Right.
So like people using rice in a long time, that's, I think, this is not truly a Japanese style.
Right. I think it's like anything. People have their own special preference for, you know, the sushi. Like, I really like a fluffy and almost like feels like vertical.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, falls like my mouth. And, you know, the temperature, I heard you serve at the body temperature.
Body temperature, this is most important thing, I guess. Body temperature and the firmness of rice. These two things is the most important of sushi rice.
Why not colder or warmer?
Colder, warmer is, you cannot find the fish flavor. And then colder is...
Because the vinegar just becomes too strong. And
too strong, and then you lose lots of flavor to feel. And then too cold, it's not exciting, not exotic.
Right. Well, by the same token, the vinegar doesn't taste as vibrant.
Yeah, and then you don't feel the our soul to like a determination of the making this sushi.
Okay. And I heard that you use, when you cook rice, you use a specific imported Japanese deep well water for flavor and texture. So what kind of water?
What kind of water?
Water. You know, you import some water to cook rice, right?
No, we don't import
rice. This is from Bangkok website.
Oh, Bangkok website. They do. Okay. Because water is different totally everywhere.
Oh, right.
We are lucky, in Japan, we are lucky to have, you know, water from the nature.
Mm.
But even here, different condition in the water, like soft water or different type of water.
Mm.
We've been using a filter in here too, but okay. Bangkok is a different condition. When I stay in the Bangkok hotel, you will find a bottle of water on the bathroom or after brushing teeth.
Right. Okay. Mm. Yeah, no, the sushi chefs and kaiseki chefs always say dashi. It comes out differently depending on the hardness of the water.
Yes, water is important.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. And so to make great sushi rice, you need vinegar, salt, and sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of vinegar, salt, and sugar do you use for your sushi rice?
We use red vinegar and white vinegar.
Blend.
Both blended. Yeah.
Mm. So that the Japanese...
Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Sake kasu vinegar, which is red.
Oh. Oh,
and
wow.
Then kome and koji, mm-hmm. white vinegar.
Okay.
Yes.
So the sake kasu vinegar, basically it's it contains the flavor of sake leaves. So it's more like more yeasty kind
that,
of?
Yeah, totally different flavor.
Mm.
But when it's combined, more different.
Wow.
Yeah, different ratio I've been trying. But
okay.
Now this is my style to more enhance the flavor from fish.
Okay. So another layer to umami layer maybe?
Yeah. But basically, more deeply, if I say that white fish and then tuna or separate, supposed to use a separate rice for the more enhanced flavor.
Okay. Wow. I'm curious to find that sake kas vinegar. Do you have to import specifically?
Yeah, this is import.
Okay.
Yes, from Japan.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about salt?
Salt, just sea salt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one too, I tried a few salt.
Mm-hmm.
And then
right. And
nicely match. It's kind of not too... how can I say it? Toke-toke-toshi. How can I say it? It's like a rounded.
Right. Yeah, it's not like
taste.
A pungent or sharp flavor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, last time I went to Japan, I went to a really convenience store and bought some salt. And it was really cheap, but that's Ako no Shio. It's
Ako no Shio. Yes, yes.
I didn't know that the salt is so sweet.
Yes, yes. Salt is the most important ingredient of the cooking.
Mm.
Yeah, they have bitterness, sweetness, everything in there. Especially when you make sweets, Japanese sweets, we need salt for that.
Right.
It's not only, if it's only sugar, it's not sharp sweetness.
Right, so it's a contrast to wake up your palate.
Yes.
Right. Okay, interesting. And so the sugar also, that you add sugar to the rice, so what kind of sugar is it?
This one is I use a Jōhakuto, which is basically we use it, and then also brown sugar.
Okay,
yes.
So Jōhakuto is more kind of refined.
Yes,
than
yes, yes.
With the brown sugar, it's that's a more flavor, earthy flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm sure you just tried so many combinations and got to this thing.
All depends on what you're cooking. Eel, when we cook eel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, different thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. But you cook rice, right? For the whole operation?
Yes, yes, yes.
Right.
All operation, we cook rice.
Right.
And then we just mix it many, many times in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And mixing rice... is once it's cooked, right, you transfer it to a big wooden kind of a container.
Uh-huh.
So how do you, when I cook sushi rice at home, I don't know if I'm doing it right. So what's the key to make it fluffy, to make it vertical?
Just how seriously you face it.
Really? I am really serious.
Just every single pieces, every single drop, that's think way.
Mm.
And then not to... not too much, just reach to every single pieces.
Right. So people say cut it in Japanese,
kare, yeah,
kiru.
Kare,
but
yes.
How do you imagine, like, to make the one each grain? You want to massage it or the kind of the image?
Yeah. There is not deeply technique or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, because I always think, how do you make this sushi rice? Like, once it's very successful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just try to get the magic out of your mouth. So, like, okay. All right. So, where do you get your fish from?
As I say, I get fish from everywhere, wherever in a season. So I use lots of East Coast fish for the winter time, especially.
Right.
Yeah. And then also from Japan, too. Mm. Japan, you know, is my main importer in Kyushu.
Mm.
My guy from Kyushu.
Okay.
Yeah, and then he sent me a lot of good condition fish.
Mm. What kind of fish from Kyushu?
Kyushu, like a sea eel, anago, and then like a hagatsuo. Yeah, like a Spanish mackerel.
Interesting.
This kind of thing.
Right. Yes. Yeah, like whenever you visit the different parts of Japan, you find different kinds of fish, which is another big part of Japanese culture, I think. So I didn't know too much about the Kyushu, which is a southern island of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds very interesting.
That's very locally they're doing that, but they have awesome fish. Good environment for the fish, too.
Okay. Right. And we tend to forget, like, fish is not like meat. They are very seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, we think of meat can be seasonal because it's lamb, but otherwise.
Yeah.
Right. So that's interesting. And so accordingly, your menu changes depending on the season.
Yeah, main like things like tuna, we don't change much. They are most of the time there is.
Mm.
But white fish, such as small fish, we use seasonally.
Mm. What's a unique one? I'm just curious.
Yeah, like such as sayori, which is a needle fish,
right.
A small one. Or, some like a blue fish, such as iwashi, sardine.
Right. Yeah, that's my favorite. Okay. And do you also get fish from Tsukiji Market?
Tsukiji Market, yes. Mm. There's a good supplier here to connect to the Japanese market.
Mm.
So it's we have from Tsukiji Market too.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like undeniably that's supposed to be the best fish market of the world. Right.
Huge and then good, good market. This is our culture.
Mm.
Yeah, it's been 80 years over there. Yeah.
And yeah, a couple times I visited there and they are so proud.
Yes.
So intense.
Yes, it is.
Right. So as a tourist, like walking around, it's almost like there's cars running around, and I feel like I'm going to be running one over.
Yeah.
But yeah, the crowd is amazing. But they're moving, right? The market is moving to nearby location.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, I heard it, but I don't know. They've been postponed.
Mm.
I don't know. That's realistic. Maybe you stay there at least this year.
Okay.
So they don't know even when.
Mm. I heard the reason is, I said, like you said, it's for 80 years old, so you have to kind of upgrade facilities for sanitary purposes. Mm. It was super clean. There's no fish smell. It's like oceanic smell, but it's kind of getting old.
Mm. That's old-fashionedly healthier, but it looks like some... too unique from other country people.
Mm. Well, that's why it's interesting to visit Tsukiji Market, because the market itself and the surrounding vendors that serve me as a tourist, but there's so many interesting ingredients and, fish-related items.
You can see there are lots of unique fish in the Tsukiji Market.
Mm.
Yeah. Right. Octopus, live octopus, walking around. Tank,
right.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, I think one of my friends who live in near Roppongi, he bikes to Tsukiji Market.
Mm-hmm.
And oysters tend to be like two. you know, $200-$300 yen, which is like $2-$3.
Yeah.
And then if you go there, it's like 60 cents. Mm-hmm. So it's like a pile of oysters yeah. at his party. It's like, oh, that's great.
This is my wonderland.
Mm.
Yes.
Right. It's a Disneyland for yes. food people.
Yes.
Right. Anyway, so what is the key to make the most out of fish flavor for your sushi?
Fish what?
I can buy fish
mm-hmm.
and make sushi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, put it on top of rice, but there's a magic that you think you use, right, to make it even tastier.
Yeah, cutting the fish to the temperature control on fish.
Okay.
If it's not too cold, depends on the fish.
Mm.
Tuna is supposed to be a little bit warmer, mean it's not too cold.
Because of the bloody
yeah,
note.
And then flavorable, matching with the body temperature rice. And then also soy sauce on the top, everything togetherness.
Mm, right, but I'm curious about, you know, the temperature. So white fish tend to be lower temperature?
White fish and then like a blue fish.
Mm.
You feel better coldness from fish side.
Mm.
So you feel that more freshness.
Okay.
Yeah, blue fish is like over temperature will be maybe some people feeling fishy.
Mm, right. So sounds like red wine, white wine, kind of. You remember.
Maybe.
Right. That's interesting. Okay. And the some chefs like Chef Eiji Ichimura, mm-hmm. Kobe Eiji in New York, formerly at the Ichimura at the Brushstroke, aged fish for a long time, even for weeks. So what do you think about aging fish for a long time?
Aging fish. There's in Japan, lots of aging fish. And then when you take good care, you can age the fish.
Mm.
So you have to talk with the fish.
Okay.
Who you are, what kind of condition he is. And mostly, I say fishy, but if you nicely take care of it, never fishy.
Mm.
So broadly, like head and scale, they are a kind of a smell from.
Mm.
So you take care of everything and good take care. Fish is good condition.
Okay, so...
I went to Japan to eat makajiki
mm-hmm.
in... 60 years old.
Wow.
That was great taste.
Wow.
Yes, so there's a way to do it, but mainly between spoil or aged, it's not much different. So if you age that long, you have to shave a lot of meat and the inside of the middle of fish only using.
Mm, it's like a dry aged beef or
yeah,
some kind
so,
of.
So like all the way some praying like this, but the taste is very rounded.
Mm.
A nice flavor in there.
Right. So to in order to age that long for 2 months,
mm-hmm.
so they cure with the vinegar or salt or some sort of
No, they don't do it. But nicely temperature control about inside of even a fridge,
mm-hmm.
lots of ice in cover up for it, and then temperature control.
Mm.
They also using the salt and change the paper.
Mm-hmm.
That kind doing a lot of work to do.
Mm.
But only one thing, 60 days. There were otherwise 1 week, 10 days around there. Even the kampachi or buri, they try to do 10 days to 2 weeks to age. And then nice meat.
Right.
Yes, so flavorable.
Mm. Yeah, actually, one time I had a dinner at Ichimura at mm-hmm. Brushstroke, mm-hmm. and Eiji-san served... I think 3 week old fish, and that was umami, a lot of umami.
Yes, that's umami. Yeah, that's came out when it's aged.
Because I think protein that breaks down, and naturally umami increases concentration. Mm-hmm. I think, right. So, do you age fish?
No, we don't. Mainly we don't.
Mm. So, okay, because it's such a big, commitment. You have to have a space in your fridge.
Mm-hmm. So, but if it's fish is fresh, is good. I don't think so.
Okay.
Some depends on the condition.
Right.
So you have to see, touch, and even taste. You have to know the fish.
Right.
Yes.
Makes sense. Conversation with the fish.
Yes, conversation
That's
with the
deep,
fish.
Right? We have to have a whole conversation, one episode
yes,
for that.
Yes.
Okay, so so shortly after you opened the sushi zoo, you earned 29 rating out of 30 from Zagat restaurant survey, and within 3 years you were awarded a prestigious Michelin star for LA sushi zoo. So and in New York, of course, you already earned a Michelin star.
Thank you so
right
much.
Right after you opened.
Thank you.
So why do you think you became so successful other than your outstanding sushi?
Yeah, that's all the hard work behind, like as a team. That's only one world. Yeah, especially, yeah, everyone working hard for early morning to midnight to spend a conversation with the fish, conversation with customer. That's all about it. Yeah, how seriously face to the customer to make a better tomorrow. That's only that thing make a achievement,
right.
I believe.
Interesting. You are trained traditionally in Japanese sushi restaurant, and here in the States, how do you make that kind of team commitment? Do you train your chefs like you are trained?
No. Yeah, just they're naturally good chef and a good server. Yeah, so they are try to make their own life better.
Right.
Yeah,
but
and then
come on, I think you know, they don't just come. They don't just open the door and they don't come, right? So how do you attract those people? You treat them like
no, I don't do nothing. Yeah, but they are good. They just face. And we have few I call them partner to they are leader. Even I think they are next generation leader. Yeah, then they decide what we want to do here, and then always seeking the better way.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think you answered my questions, because that trust, a very trustful relationship
yes.
within your team.
Happiness, without happiness, we cannot go forward. So
right.
it only not customer, everyone to the, try to find the happiness.
That's true,
yes.
Right? Yeah, you can really sense the culture of the restaurant. It's a very high-tense restaurant. The food is high-tense too. So, okay. And but then in the same context, how do you predict the future of sushi in this country? Because we started to see talented non-Japanese sushi chefs. Like, for instance, a guest on episode 37, Robbie Cook, became the head chef at the Morimoto. So how do you see those people's future, including Japanese and, you know, non-Japanese
yeah,
chefs?
Yeah, I think, I don't know about much. Also, how can I do? I don't know. I just face straight to my life, and then what should I be? So I have nothing like a mentioned plan or future, but I just show them how I am thinking. Then they could think of themselves,
right.
And then they are really talented, capable.
Sounds like I think the future is bright.
Yeah, always thinking, people thinking how happiness create on the future, own future. So they could think about, they
right.
could decide themselves.
I think places like your restaurant is kind of an incubator for them to go.
I'm not good about teach. My partner get more smarter and then doing well. And then, often I teach from them. Yeah, we have I have one guy who working for me the long time, 10 years. He's very smart. He teaches for me a lot of things. And as a New York chef, but one of a young guy. And then also Bangkok, that's also one of a young guy.
Right.
And then I have a general manager. They're all smart. And even the waitress, sometimes I learn from them. This is, I call it my team. And then every single person who works for this company is like my partner.
Mm. So
that's the energy for the future.
Right. Yeah. So continuous learning from each other. That's a great
yes.
team.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
That's very meaningful. Yeah, I have to remember that. So and so. We had a Nick Sakagami on yes. episode 70, uh-huh. and we discussed sustainable Kindai tuna fish. Mm. So as a sushi chef, what is your opinion about sustainable fish yeah, consumption?
We have, especially me, like our little age people. I age myself. And then we have like a tennen fish. We say the tennen shinwa. Mm. Like every Ginza restaurant or surrounded restaurant has to be like a no farm raised fish.
Right, that's all white caught.
But I'm here in the U.S. when I think about future, maybe 20, 50 years ago or later, or even 100 years later, how the people, young generation people enjoy the sushi.
Mm.
So we start using, trying sustainable fish too.
Right.
Yes. And right. then try to combine lots of things to more thinking.
Mm. Well, and globally, for healthy diet, everybody is supposed to be eating more fish. So I think it makes sense. We have to grow more fish.
Yeah, wild fish not unlimited.
Mm.
So we have to think about like a we did like a whale.
Mm. Which is very interesting, sensitive topic.
Yes, but even that, yeah, in the wild thing is a balance is important.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, well, of course, everybody's connected through the food chain.
Yes, right. Food chain, yes.
So have to be very responsible.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Okay, and in 2013, you opened a Zot Downtown in downtown LA. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And 2015, you opened a New York Sushi Zo in Manhattan, and you opened a Sushi Zo Bangkok in Thailand in 2016. Mm-hmm. So what is your plan for the future?
Plan? I'm opening New York one more at 29 and Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're planning to open around the end of April.
Wow.
To the second one.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Right. Thank you.
So maybe eventually you're going to open one in Tokyo or?
Yeah, hopefully.
Mm.
Yeah, everywhere I want to go to. I'm interested in Europe and Dubai, around there too.
Amazing. Okay.
To bring our passion.
Well, really good luck.
Thank you.
So thank you for joining us today. And I'm sorry. It's a dry condition, sorry. So, listeners, if you'd like to know more about Keizo's restaurants, please go to sushizo.us, that is sushizo.us. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org. And Japaneats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher Podcast. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and write a review. We'd appreciate your feedback. And our engineers, David Tatsuya, our engineers today, Vitor Hash. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody. everybody. I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.